Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, found on the internet at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. We hope you are encouraged by the following recorded Bible study to look deeper into every word that proceeds from the mouth of God and how they were lived out in the life of Yeshua HaMashiach, often called Jesus the Christ.
As is standard tradition, I will be reading the command for the trumpets. That is just so we're all on the same page. We jump to, of course, it's rattled off a few different times, but the primary instances are looking at Leviticus and, of course, the Book of Numbers. So Leviticus 23, just a small section rattled off to you, just so we're all on the same page, and what we're here for as God commanded. Leviticus 23, starting in verse 23, it says, "When Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, 'Speak to the children of Israel, say, in the seventh month, in the first day of the month, there should be a rest day for you, a remembrance with shofar blast of a holy convocation. You should not do any laborious work, and you shall offer a fire offering to Jehovah.'" Of course, that is our command, which, of course, we're given. All of the holy days are listed out in Leviticus chapter 23. And, of course, it's also repeated again in Numbers 29, which discusses a similar topic. We're going to route these Torah portion sections just so we're all on the same page again. So from Leviticus 23, jump to Numbers 29. We'll come back. Don't worry about it. Number 29 here. Numbers 29 also discusses the same topic, the first few verses there. Now this, of course, is more of a how you the offerings go with it, which we might be able to cover all of them today. I do not know. Numbers 29, the first few verses, first five verses there, also discusses this holy day. It says, "In the seventh month, on the first day of the month, there should be a holy convocation for you. You shall do no laborious work. It should be a day of shofar blasting sound for you. You should make a burnt offering for a satisfying aroma to Jehovah. One bull, one ram, seven male lambs of first year, unblemished, and their meal offering. Fine flour mixed with oil. 3/10 of an ephah for the bull, 2/10 of ephah for the ram, 1/10 for each lamb of the seven lambs. One male goat for sin offering to provide for you an atonement." This is a side, of course, from the burnt offering for the new moon. Because this is not just a holiday, it's also a new moon. So it's a combination of both events tied together into one, which is pretty consistent. How many of you have been doing this for years? A few years, right? We know the stuff. Give or take a few, right? 5, 10, 20, 100. It's all about the same sometimes after a while. Well, we're a lot of our few decades worth of celebrations, and this is one of them. This is one of our celebrations. In the course of studying trumpets and studying the shofar blast, now I do realize, don't get me wrong, there is a distinction, of course, between the silver trumpets that God commanded, of course, a shofar that we all typically use. My father had purchased the representation of the two silver trumpets. These are just knockoffs. They're not the original, in case you were wondering. I'm sure you are aware of that, but just wanted to reiterate. They are silver plated, I believe. They're not actually true silver, and they're not hammered work. But anyway, the silver trumpets, of course, in the Book of Numbers, chapter 10, has listed how they're used, what we do with them, and their functionality. Numbers chapter 10 discusses the details of their appearance, the different blasting noises, the long shorts, the short blasts, all the various, and the repetitions in between, and how they are used and function. So we can go there real quick, Numbers chapter 10, just for remind ourselves as far as what the trumpets are used for, because these particular trumpets, silver trumpets, along with your shofars, are used at this time of year, our blasting of our great noise celebration. So Numbers chapter 10, The first 10 verses discusses the silver trumpets themselves. By the way, I'm skimming through the Torah portion sections on purpose because I'm going to go through detail later on in other areas of our Bibles. But we all have to have the same foundation. So Numbers chapter 10 discusses the trumpets themselves, how they're used, and that they are used on our holidays and the season or the time of trumpets itself, the feast trumpets. So Numbers chapter 10, the first 10 verses says, Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, make for yourselves two silver trumpets, make them hammered out. They should be yours for the summoning of the assembly and to cause the camps to journey. When they sound a long blast with them, the entire assembly shall assemble to you to the entrance of the tent of meeting. If they sound a long blast with one, just the leaders shall assemble to you, the heads of Israel's thousands. When you sound short blasts, the camps resting on the east shall journey. When you sound short blasts a second time, the camps resting on the south shall journey. Short blasts they shall sound for their journeyings. When you gather together the congregation, you shall sound a long blast, but not a short blast. The sons of Aaron, the Kohanim, shall sound the trumpets, and it shall be for you an eternal decree for your generations. When you go to wage war in your land against the enemy who will oppress you, you shall sound short blasts of the trumpets, and you shall be recalled before Jehovah your God, and you shall be saved from your foes. So what is the functionality of our trumpets? What are they used for?
Signals
indicating people either to come or to go as they're traveling from place to place or if they're doing it in wartime. What else are they used for? Times and seasons, because we are to blast them, of course, in Numbers 29, so we should blast them as well. Blast them for our new moons and our holiday seasons, we blast them as well. So they are for two primary functions. One is to call people to go do something, whatever the something is, as well as to appoint or note that an event has or is occurring now. So both types of signals. I have a question for you in case you've forgotten. I'm sure you all know this anyway, but it's a rhetorical question. What does God's voice sound like?
A
great big trumpet. And how do we know that? From Sinai, he records that. Let's go to Exodus in case we've forgotten. Exodus, this is chapter 19. Get that right. Exodus 19, it discusses what God's voice sounds like to the people. Hence the whole concept of celebration of the trumpets themselves and the calling forth of people and carrying out that kind of thing. Let's see here. It says, jump down to the actual day, Exodus 19, verse 16. This is Exodus 19, verse 16. It discusses what the sounds are. It says, on the third day, by the way, this is the giving of the Ten Commandments, what we're discussing, Exodus 19. On the third day, when it was morning, there was thunder and lightning and heavy cloud on the mountain, and the sound of the shofar was very powerful, and the entire people that was in the camps shuddered. Moses brought the people forth the camp toward God, and they stood at the bottom of the mountain. All Mount Sinai was smoking because Jehovah had descended upon it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the entire mountain shuddered exceedingly. The sound of the shofar grew continually much stronger. Moses would speak, and God would respond to him with a voice. I'm not going to list all the Ten Commandments. That's for another holy day. And we jump down as the people then end up hearing with their own ears the sound of God as he declares openly the Ten Commandments. They all hear every commandment from God's voice. I assume he spoke their language pretty well. They heard it all. And of course, as they continue, when they finish the sounding of the Ten Commandments, in chapter 20 of Exodus, the last command, the entire people, let's jump to verse 15 of chapter 20 of Exodus. The reply, the response of the people was in verse 15. It says, the entire people saw the thunder and the flames, the sound of shofar and smoking mountains. The people saw and trembled and stood from afar. Said Moses, you speak to us and we shall hear. Let God not speak to us, lest we die. So again, what were the sounds they were hearing? What were they afraid of? The thunderings, the great noise that was coming off this mountain. So in this, the shofar, the trumpet principle, the idea of the great blasting, what is it commemorating? What are we listening to? God's voice. God's voice. That's what the principle is. You're listening to God's voice. Whether it be a voice to go or to come, to live or to do something, it's God's voice you're listening to. Now, is God's voice a pleasant one? It can. Not always. It can be, but not always. Sometimes it's a scary voice, right? Hence, we have this example. We have they were afraid. Now, was Moses afraid of God's voice? No. Why not? Didn't he hear the same thing everybody else heard? Yes. What was Moses' state of being spiritually to make him not afraid of God's voice? What was that?
Good to great.
Between good and great spiritually, yeah. Was he fearful of God's voice because of his sins, transgressions, or iniquities? No, he wasn't. So who would be fearful of God's voice? Those who are afraid due to their sins, transgressions, and iniquities. Because those things is what makes you afraid. Is God going to harm you if you are doing everything well? No. It doesn't harm you if we're doing things well. Where does the harm come? Where does the fear come? Fear. We have fear from things we are afraid of, right? What are we afraid of? Well, naturally, things we've done wrong, in case we're dealing with God, things that can cause harm to us, either physically or spiritually. That's our nature, our fear. Or even fear of the unknown, same principle. We don't know what will happen to us. Well, these individuals, they were afraid, but Moses was not. So I have a question for you. When God's voice sounds, who is afraid and who is not? Those who are afraid have something to fear, don't they? Those who are not afraid, do they have anything to fear? Clearly not, because they're not afraid. The definition of being afraid is you have something to fear. It's a rhetorical definition. I'm pointing this out to you because the prophets talk about something very specific when it deals with God's voice. That there are certain groups that are afraid and certain groups that aren't. Yes.
Well, Rose. The scripture says, don't fear man who can kill the body,
right,
but fear God who can kill both body and soul.
Correct.
So you have to have a reverent fear of God,
mm-hmm,
but if you're obeying God to the best of your ability, there's nothing to fear.
One. Yeah, you already have reverent fear if you're obeying him, right? you already revere him to begin with. Yes, Carmel.
I just want to point out, too, he probably has a couple of different voices.
That is true.
He's got mom's
that
voice,
is true.
That,
yeah.
You know,
and then you have dad's
and then
voice.
That yeah. Loving, soft voice. Just saying.
Right, the middle name, that always brings it out. So he does have different voices, that is true. We have certain things that we fear and certain things we don't fear, and there are certain individual groups of peoples that are prophets to talk about that they are afraid. And we have certain groups that aren't. And we discuss why is that, what group do you want to be part of? The one that is afraid to hear his voice, the one that is not afraid to hear his voice. Obviously, we choose the part that is not afraid to hear his voice. What he has to say about or to or with us does not fear us. Does not make fear inside. Make fear put up inside of us. We are comfortable dealing with our God. Why? Because he's your dad. He's your dad. He's your father. He loves you just like everybody else. He has that relationship with you. So do you fear your father? Hopefully not. You may respect him for various reasons, but don't fear your father. There's reference there. All right? So let's go through some of these things. First of all, when we're dealing with the fear of who is afraid, who is not afraid, let's jump to the first time which God uses his voice, or if I say the first time, the primary time, the most famous time, when he uses his voice to do great work Everybody else just kind of participates. All right? So at Joshua, chapter 6, one of the more famous stories we all know from childhood. I'm going to read the entire story of Joshua, just a small section of it, because it's rather lengthy to read how the whole process occurs. But in Joshua 6, we discuss this nature of what God has done. Now, this, of course, is symbolic, but we're doing this to understand the nature of how God is dealing with both his people, contrasting with those who are not his people. So in Joshua 6, it says, "Now Jericho was securely shut up because the children of Israel, none went out and none came in. And Jehovah said to Joshua, 'See, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and its mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, all you men of war. You shall go around the city once. This you do for 6 days. The seven priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. On the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times. The priests shall blow the trumpets. Then it shall come to pass, when they make the long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout, and then the wall of the city will fall down flat. The people shall go up every man straight before him.'" Who took the city down?
God.
Did the sound of the trumpets take it down? No. It was just a noise. Noise doesn't take things down. God does. But what, recall, these people all lived, they all were there at Sinai. Granted, many of them were children at the time. But they all heard, they know what God's voice sounds like. So when they're declaring and blasting out these sounds, the shofar as well as the trumpets together blasting out this city, what, in their minds, what are they symbolically doing? Declaring God, using God's voice, symbolically of course, to blast this town, the walls of the city. Now, God did something very unique with this particular town, unlike all others. Because he is the one who took it down, they did not. He said there's something very specific about this town, is that no one is to take anything from it. The whole city was set aside. It's a unique battle. In that the people, they were allowed to take it all down as far as the destruction and such. But it says in verse 10, first of all, that's when you don't make any sound yet. Let's jump down. It says verse, the city. And verse 24, they burned the city, all that was the fire, only the silver and gold, and the vessels of bronze and iron, they put in the treasury of the house of Jehovah. They utterly destroyed everything. Verse 21 says, they destroyed all that was in the city, both man, women, young ox, young old sheep, ox, donkey, ledges, sword. The only ones who survived, of course, was Rahab and her family. So nothing, they didn't get to receive anything from it. Now that is not the case with every other town they took. Every other town they took, they fought with a sword, they sieged it, they put their siege works, they fought against it to attack it, and they destroyed it, and they get to receive and keep the bounty that was taken from that town. Except Jericho. Why? They didn't destroy Jericho. Who did? God did. God's the one who did it. Why would they benefit? Why would they receive God's work? This is God's plan. Now, of course, as it ends, Joshua declares in verse 26, chapter 6, says, charge them, says, cursed be the man before Jehovah who rises up and builds the city of Jericho again. He shall lay its foundation with his firstborn, and his youngest shall set upon its gates. So Jehovah was with the Lord, Jehovah was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout all the country. So Jericho, of course, was destroyed by God, and Joshua would have cursed upon that anyone rebuild it again. And of course, naturally, we know the story. Yes, someone did come back and rebuild it, and he lost his children. His children died in the process of building the city, consistent with what God had done. So what does God's voice do? What is it doing in this story about Jericho? Is it calling people to him? Is the story of Jericho, is that one? Is that the voice, the God's, the symbolic, you of course, using the trumpets, is the voice calling people to God as it discusses before they're going out and their journeyings? No. What's it doing in this story? It's judging. It's a destructive story, isn't it? right? It's a war type of story. So in God's great voice he has, when he gave our 10 commandments that we have, we live by, was that a destructive event? No. But does he use his voice for destructive events? Yes. Now, who is the recipient of the destructive event? Those who don't honor him. Those who don't follow our God. That's who's the recipient. So who should be afraid of God's voice? Those who don't honor our God. Make sense? So which side of the voice do you want to be on? The ones who do not honor him or the ones that do honor him? The destructing side or the non-destructive side? It's pretty obvious, right? This is pretty basic. So we're not doing nothing complicated here. I'm putting this stuff out to you because there's something we want to get to shortly. We'll get there in a little while. Now, God's voice, of course, is it's just a symbolism that between the trumpet sound and his voice. They're not actually one of the same thing. They're symbolic of each other. It's symbolism. But also we have the sound of God's voice discussed in various different places. Of course, the prophets discuss it extensively. In the case of, which we actually quote on, I think it's New Moons, Psalm 81, because of the blasting of the shofar sound on your new moons, your festival occasions, your celebrations, your feasts of joy. Why is that? Now, mind you, if we use the symbols that the shofar or the sound of trumpets is similar to or symbolic of God's voice, when you are blasting this sound at these occasions that God has appointed, what are you doing? Symbolically, what are you doing when you're blasting the noise of God's voice on these holy day or new moon or occasions? You're saying you're called, you're using God's voice, essentially, symbolically, of course, to declare that's what this is. Now, do we use shofar blasts for your birthdays? Why not? Did God appoint your birthday? No, he didn't. I'm not saying he's not in control of your day of your birth necessarily, but he didn't appoint your birthday. How do we know he didn't appoint it? If you can find your birth date written here, I will concede. But as far as I have found, no one's birthday was written down that so-and-so will be born on this particular date in time. Therefore, it's not an appointed time. So we don't use our birthdays, the events, to celebrate him. Now, I'm not saying birthday couldn't accidentally happen to fall upon a holiday, but the shofar blast is not because you were born. Just in case you were confused, it's not that reason. We know why you were born, but we know why the point was. So we don't use them for alternate occasions, do we? Well, why not? Because God didn't appoint them. So when we use them on God's occasions, why are we using them for? Because God appointed them. What are they symbolic of when we do that? Well, mind you, we know our God solely by his words. So his words declared dates and times, didn't they? Hence, we know what they are. If our God never spoke words, would we know him? No. How do I know that? Simple. In the beginning, God said. Those are words. If in the beginning God didn't say, would we have words? Would we even have a beginning? No. So we know God by the words he gave to us. So when we use our shofars or our trumpet sounds, we are symbolically using God's words or saying God declared this. So we're using it as a blasting out, reminding us God declared this time, this event, this occasion. Hence, Psalm 81 discusses in your joyful celebrations of his appointed times for your new moons and your events. Now, we also, as he commanded, uses words when he's conquering the territory of Canaan. Now, those are not appointed times, are they? No, they're not. Just an intuition for you. But what is the symbolism between the conquering of the land of Canaan? Because God's words said, you shall conquer the land of Canaan, leaving no man, woman, or child to live. That's what he said to do. So you're even in this comings and goings of the tribes to conquer in their wars, you also use it because God declared you to do so. Now today, in our modern history, modern world, are we conquering the land of Canaan anymore? The answer is no, in case you weren't sure about that. Just in case, it's no. Are we doing any of the appointed things that a military would use, functionality-wise, in the commandments for the Torah today? The answer is no, we're not. So we're not. So do we use the shofar to use God's voice? We're declaring and moving our armies around that are to conquer our territories. No, we don't. Now, I do realize throughout history they've used bugle sounds for other things for armies to move. That's not the issue. We're discussing God's commands, how the tribes moved and how they did things. So the time which had happened that God's voice was commanded for destroying towns or cities, that time has passed. We aren't doing that anymore. Now, we could argue whether we should or shouldn't. I'm discussing the modern day world in that respect. But as far as what is done now, what is not done. So times, certain events that God has done, we use his shofar blast or his voice as we remind ourselves God commanded them. But at sometimes those events pass and they're not there anymore. Which makes sense, right? We're not in our tribal territories anymore, are we? I don't even know what my tribe is. I hope I'm not. You know, I haven't even have one. I'm not in tribal territory anymore. I don't use a shofar to go to God's temple anymore, do I? And no one else here does either. So that time has passed as well. But what time has not passed? What events did God say do not pass? His appointed times. They never pass away, his holy days. They never go away. He declared them forever. Not just forever, but forever, forever. The other kind of forever. The forever that doesn't end. So, but now, there is a particular event which we as people, trying to follow our God and follow his son, we have instructions to pay attention to and to listen to. Because there are certain sounds that change over time. Now, I'm going to jump through a few things here on the prophets section before I go where I'm going to be tagging and spending most of my time with. I'm going to jump to a few things. One of the things we're jumping to is on, let's jump to Isaiah. Isaiah 27. So we have our forever events, the appointed times. But there's also appointed events. So an event that will occur or is going to be occurring at some point in time in the future. We don't know something of the date and time, but we know events will occur. And at that point in time, you also hear the sound of the shofar blasting. But it's not in necessarily what we will perceive or what we see in our physical everyday existence. So I'm jumping, by the way, into the middle of a prophecy. That's not fair. That's not true. I take it back. I'm jumping in the middle of a set of prophecies. They're all individually broken apart. So the way Isaiah speaks and how he wrote in like a paragraph format. So he'd have a prophecy set of like four or five verses, then he would stop. He may come back a few days later and then add to that and then stop. A few days later, add to that and stop. So it's broken up in paragraph sets. And so most of Isaiah speaks that way. It's just the way he wrote. I don't know if that's how God was talking to him or not, but that's how he wrote. So we're jumping in the middle of a set of prophecies he gave, and this is the middle of it, in the discussion of how God is dealing with and trying to repair the people of Israel and the tribes. So this is chapter 27. We're in the middle of one of these sets. This set ends at the end of chapter 30, middle of 31. So this set starts out in the beginning of chapter 27, but it ends at the end of 31, or middle of 31, sorry. So we're in the middle of this set. So this Isaiah 27, starting in verse 12, says, "It shall come to pass in that day that Yehovah will thresh from the channel of the river brook of Egypt, and you will be gathered one by one, O you children of Israel. So it shall be in that day the great trumpet will be blown, and they will come who are about to perish in the land of Assyria, and they who are outcasts in the land of Egypt, and shall worship Yehovah in the holy mountain at Jerusalem." So That event, that is an event, isn't it? Is that an appoint? Hold on, we'll get that in a minute. Is that an appointed time? Yeah, that's a complicated question. Is it an appointed time? It's an event. Is it an appointed time? Note the words there. In that day. Is that an appointed day? Yes. That's what it is. It is an appointed day. Now, do we know which day it is? Not necessarily. But it is an appointed day. So we know there is a time that's associated with, whatever the time may be, is debatable, but it is an appointment of a time, of a day. But it's also an event. Now, is the event supposed to happen all the time? No, not necessarily. What does it say here? It says in verse 13, it says, they will come about who are about to perish in the land of Assyria, and they who are outcasts of Egypt, they shall worship Jehovah in the holy mountain of Jerusalem. So, as opposed to perpetually perishing in Assyria, or perpetually being an outcast in Egypt, which happens all the time, it is a time which that is occurring, and those events will end. The perpetual outcast in Egypt and the perishing in Assyria will end, as you are called, at this appointed date and time, this event, all coming together, a date and time and event all combined together to one occurrence. The one occurrence, of course, of worshiping in Jerusalem. Now, of course, naturally, he's referring to his people, Israel, not just any random person. But I have a question for you then as a result, since he's referring to a group of people who are supposed to hear this call. Is this group of people he's referring to hearing the call? Are they in the category of the ones who are afraid of God's voice, or the ones who are comforted with God's voice? The ones who are hearing the call to come to Jerusalem. They're comforted. Why? Because where they're at, they're afraid. Where they're at in Assyria and Egypt, they're afraid. But they go to Jerusalem because they're comforted. So are they fearful of God's voice? No, they're not. Who is? Those who are in Assyria, the ones who are left back in Egypt, who are trying to see them as outcasts, the ones who are in Assyria who are trying to cause them to perish, they would be afraid of God's voice. Now, I won't go through all the scriptures. One of the scriptures actually lists off that says that the nations will gather together and literally push them out. Yeah. Go. Get out of here. You must have to deal with Egypt. Get out of here. And here is a gift to your God. Get you out of here. We don't want you here. You're too dangerous for us. Hence, just like the people of Moses' time, we're afraid of God's voice. You go and deal with him. We'll stay back here. The same symbolic reasons. Those nations who are of the fearful side, rightfully so, should be fearful, and they will send those to go to God in their place. You go. You go. You take this. It's the same symbolic event. Yes, Daniel.
So it's interesting because he says he's calling them one by one. That's an individual call to Gentiles.
It is. And I like that because in one of my favorite verses is in Ezekiel 48. It discusses that every tribe, every nation that God set aside, the 12 tribes of Israel, have their territory in Israel. Allocated out. And that never changes. But in Ezekiel 48, it says, any nation, any member of any nation, whoever they attach their name to, their side, whatever tribe they want to attach to, they now receive their same identical inheritance of property and everything else to that tribe. That means all the Gentiles say, I am a such and such. I agree with this tribe. Or I like that place. I'm with these people. God says, you're right. You're now with them. You're now one and the same with them. You are now part of that inheritance, part of that tribe. I love Ezekiel 48 for that reason. Well, for other reasons too, but that's one of my favorite verses. It gives me comfort at all times, knowing that whatever happens, as long as I put my hat on one of those tribes, whether I belong to it or not, I do now. and I get the same benefit inheritance. And it says I am an equal inheritor, an equal recipient of everything that tribe gets to. It doesn't matter what tribe it is. any one of the 12 tribes, you choose, well, you could argue 13 tribes, you get to choose. We can debate whether Levi is in that or not, because some people argue he's priesthood and blah, blah, blah. But that, I won't go into those details. But the point is, you can attach yourselves. It's a comforting thing. So each individual is called one at a time, both his people, Israel itself, as well as those who are not his people, but they all get to call it up. They all get the opportunity. Anybody hears his voice? Because who are the people who hear his voice? His children. Go to John 18 in case you've forgotten. John 18. Don't ever forget this verse. Just for your own personal life, never forget this verse. Who are those who hear his voice? John 18. The tail end, it says, verse 38, Pilate is talking to Messiah at this time. Verse 37, John 18, verse 38, 7. It says, Pilate ever said to him, "Are you the king then?" And Jesus answered, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into this world, that I should bear witness the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." All right? Don't ever forget that. Don't ever forget that. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. It's an important thing to always remember. If you're not sure if you're hearing God speaking, or whether it's God's voice, or whether is God really with me or not, are you of truth, or are you not? What is true? What's in the Torah? It's all listed. It's quite extensive. Yeah, the word. It's all written here. Every word he spoke, it's all written here. So we know what truth is. If you're of it, God's with you. Now, you may not like the results sometimes. You may have some corrections. That's okay. You're still with him. So that's an important aspect. Don't ever forget, if you're hearing God's voice, or you're not sure, be of truth, or be with truth, be with his words, and you will hear his voice, whatever that voice sounds like, whether it's a great blasting shofar sound, or as Elijah God experienced, the still small voice in the back of your head. You'll still hear the voice. It's important. Let's see. So don't forget that verse. It's important to remember that. Let's go back where we were. Let's jump to another section here. In the recipient side, as I mentioned earlier, so you have the two different categories: people who are afraid to hear God's voice, and people who are not afraid to hear God's voice. Now we want to be on the side who are not afraid to hear God's voice, the great sound of shofar blasting. The people who are afraid, however, we have other areas to focus on. So, that was John 18. I had John. Sorry. I'm jumping to the. I'm returning back to prophets. So I'm jumping back to other areas. So in this case, we just finished Isaiah 27. The latter half, that being called back. But there are others who are afraid to hear God's voice. Now, this is recorded in a couple different places. We're going to jump to Joel chapter 2, which is a different group of people hearing God's voice. Joel's the small little book before Amos, in case you're not sure where it's at. So Joel chapter 2 discusses also hearing God's voice, because we have different groups of people who hear God's voice. Those who are afraid to hear his voice, and those who are not afraid to hear his voice. Isaiah discussed those who were not afraid to hear his voice. They were pleased by it. They were comforted by it. But Joel chapter 2 discusses other things as well. Now this, of course, is those who are of a rather destructive side. Because note, even though you may be a biological descendant of one of the tribes or anybody else for that matter, you can be turned to being afraid of God's voice. Your world, your life, the fear of God's voice can be both from a Gentile perspective or from an Israelite perspective. Both can be fearful. Joel chapter 2, it says, "Blow the trumpet in Zion and sound the alarm, my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble. For the day of Jehovah is coming, for it is at hand. A day of darkness and gloominess, a day of cloud and thick darkness, like the morning clouds spread over the mountains. A people come, great and strong, the like of whom has never been, nor will there ever be any such after them, even for many successive generations. A fire devours before them, and behind them a flame burns, and the land is like the Garden of Eden, before them, behind them a desolate wilderness. Surely nothing shall escape them, their appearance like the appearance of horses, like a swift steed, so they run, with a noise like chariots, the mountaintops they leap, like the noise of a flaming fire that devours the stubble, like a strong people set in battle array. Before the people writhe in pain, all faces are drained of color, they run like mighty men, they climb the wall like men of war, everyone marches in formation, they do not break their ranks, they do not push one another, everyone marches in his own column, when they lunge between the weapons, they are not cut down. They run to and fro in the city, and where they run on the wall. They climb in the houses, they enter the windows like a thief, and the earth quakes before them. The heavens tremble, the sun and the moon grow dark, and the stars diminish their brightness. The Lord gives voice before his army, for his camp is very great, for strong is the one who executes his word, for the day of Jehovah is great and very terrible. Who can endure it? We'll stop there for a minute. What's that sound like? Are the recipients of that army fearful? Should they be afraid of hearing God's voice? Yeah. Or should they be comforted? What do you think? They fall on the fearful side, don't they? Right? Yeah. You want to be the recipient of that army? I don't. I'm just telling you, I don't. Maybe you do, but I don't. So this category of people, these are in God's own territory. This is God's own land. This is the story of the Lord's army, right? We were the little kids. We pretend to be swords and fight each other with the Lord's army. We put on the armor of God, all that stuff, right? That's what this is supposed to be. Let's represent this. The recipient of that voice of God, that declaration, is that a building up, comforting one, or is that a destroying, tearing down one? So we discuss in Isaiah, the people who were called out to come to his land, were they fearful? No, quite the opposite. The hearing God's voice was a comforting thing. Well, the people who are receiving this particular destruction, are they comforted by hearing God's voice coming? No, they're not. So does it matter whether or not you are a biological descendant or not? No. As Messiah pointed out, those who hear truth or of truth hear my voice. Those who are not, don't. What do they hear? Fear and destruction. Just like the people back in Moses' time, what were they afraid of? They heard the voice of God, and they felt fear for being destroyed. Now, they weren't destroyed, but they felt that way. They were afraid, and Moses wasn't. While in Isaiah, we're discussing with people that are not afraid, but the others, the other nations are. Well, here in Joel, we're discussing even those within inside Jerusalem, inside the territory of Israel, Judah, they are afraid, as opposed to comforted. So the nature of being in one group of being comforted or being afraid, is that based on your nationality, your religion, your belief in your history, your ancestry? No, it's not. It's a single individual event. A single person is afraid or not afraid. A single person follows God or follows truth or does not follow God, does not follow truth. It's an individual-based idea, right? So hearing God's voice, yes, he has an appointed time as trumpets. Everybody comes together to hear God's voice, right? That's the idea of the appointed times. But also, each one of us hear God's voice as an individual calling. The nature of the blast trumpets, that God would call you all forward. When he says, you're to call them forward, we read that in Numbers. He blasts the shofar, or blasts the trumpet, and you call either the leaders or all the people, right, to call them up. Well, you have to hear that, don't you? You have to hear the sound. You have to hear that blast go off, else you won't come. You won't know. So there's the nature of your individual calling. Your individual gets to hear God, your individual person. So we're going to jump to our next prophet before we go to where we're going to conclude at, which is in the book of Revelation for a while. We'll jump to Zechariah chapter 9. Now, I will not argue who or what the army in the book of Joel is referring to, because I'm not that smart when it comes to discussing theological ideas. But in Zechariah chapter 9, we do discuss which God says, which I find of comforting value to me. This is jump to verse, let's see here. I'm going to read the whole chapter because I have the things I want to cover. This is Zechariah chapter 9. Let's see here, verse. We'll jump to referring to this is a, this is again, like Isaiah, Zechariah wrote similarly in the prophetical paragraph sets. So we're jumping again also in this one too, which I don't usually like doing, but I'm in the interest of time, I do. So in Zechariah chapter 9, we could discuss earlier, but it's not terribly important right now for this velvet discussion. Jump to verse 10 through the next few verses. So Zechariah chapter 9, starting in verse 10, says, I will cut off the chariots, the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem. The battle bow shall be cut off. He shall speak peace the nations, his dominion shall be from sea to sea, and from the river the ends of the earth. Now, who are we referring to? This is referring to Messiah doing these things, not just anybody. Continue on. And as for you also, because of the blood of your covenant, I will set your prisoners free from the waterless pit. Return to the stronghold, you prisoners of hope. Even today I declare that I will restore double to you, for I have bent Judah my bow and fitted the bow with Ephraim and raised up your sons, O Zion, against your sons, O Greece, and made you like the sword of a mighty man. This event, this descriptive time, I have a question for you, as we've mentioned so far. In this story here, this section we just read, we'll continue on in a minute. Who is afraid of God's voice and who's not in this one symbolic paragraph? We have Judah and Ephraim and Greece and the prisoners who are being set free. Who's afraid? Greece. Who's not afraid? The prisoners are not afraid. And who's being used as a tool? Judah, and who's the other one? Ephraim. Continue on. Then Jehovah will be seen over them, and his arrow will go forth like lightning, and Jehovah will blow the trumpet and go with the whirlwinds from the south. Jehovah of hosts will defend them. They shall devour and subdue with sling stones. They shall drink and roar as if with great wine. They shall be filled with blood like basins in the corners of the altar. For Jehovah their God will save them in that day as the flock of his people. For they shall be like the jewels of a crown, lifted like a banner over his land. For how great is their goodness and how great is their beauty. Grain shall make the young men thrive and new wine the young women. So what's the prophecy telling us? What's talking about? Who is the recipient of the comforting, the strength, they're pleased with hearing their God's voice? And who's the recipient of the destructive, harsh hand, the difficulty of God's voice? Ephraim, the prisoners, and Judah versus the prison keepers. Greece, that the category of groups, individuals. Now, we're not discussing national borders here. We're discussing individual types of people. Who is recipient of God's voice, who is not. So when you deal with God's voice and deal with how God speaks, you can hear it two different ways. You can hear it as a beneficial prophecy of great lifting you up. You can also hear it as a voice of tearing you down, destroying what you have dealt and what you have done and worked with for years, right? We have those two categories. Now let's go to the area which is relevant to more of what I wanted to talk about today. Jump to the book of Revelation, which discusses this in great detail. Yeah, it's the one just before, no, sorry, just before maps. Revelation's story, of course, discussed, which we know these very, very well. Now, I don't know if you noticed, most of you I'm sure probably did, in the verses I went through, do you notice there was a theme in the concept of a particular day, right? A particular event. It was always reference of that day. It was vague, but it was in that day or some future event. We discussed that already in a few verses. There's a particular appointed time that God has set for these things. We don't necessarily know all the appointments, doesn't really matter, but he still has an appointment with it. Hence, why the theology has developed over the years, that the fall feasts, trumpets, atonement, and Sukkot, are all centered around our future, the events that God will be putting upon mankind, as opposed to the spring feasts, which are focused upon what God has done to man. For as the Exodus, the death of Messiah, the Ten Commandments, the Spirit of God being put upon us, those are all based in the spring, and of course, the summer feasts as well. That's been a theology for, I don't know how many centuries now, been broken up into two different groupings. There's the fall feast category, which seemed to center more around of a correction and a cleansing of the people of the world. And there's a spring feast center, which is more of a, let's give you direction in your life of how to live. Right, the two different groupings. Hence, the spring feasts focus heavily upon not that you knew what you were doing, but we're going to fix you anyway, and here's your list of instructions on how to live. Right, this is how you will live, the spring feasts. But in the fall feasts, it's not about how you will live, it's how did you do? How'd you do? Right, we look back at the year, how did you do? Well, you look back at your life, how'd you do? Or in God's case, look back at the history of mankind. How did each individual do? So we have this theology broken up this way. Yeah. Wait till after atonement, right? So we deal with this. So we have these the theology broken up this way. It's not by happenstance, because the Bible's pretty thick with that theory, that concept. It's very, very thick with the idea that trumpets, atonement, and Sukkot are all heavily pushing toward that day, meaning the day of judgment or day of final correction or final life with God, what it'll look like. Hence, Revelation is very, very heavy with the same themes and same symbolisms that we find in the fall feasts. In Revelation chapter 6 discusses, of course, chapter 8, I apologize, chapter 8. Chapter 8 discusses, of course, our first commemoration of our Feast of Trumpets. Revelation chapter 8, jump to verse, we'll go through the entire book of Revelation. It's too extensive to cover today, but just we'll jump through some highlights. So jump to verse 6, the first trumpet for the Feast of Trumpets. It says, "So the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown into the earth. And a third of the trees are burned up, and all the green grass was burned up." No. Mind you, in case you've forgotten, Revelation is written in the eyes of what God sees, not what man sees. All right? So these are all symbolic things. Grass, trees, objects. These are all symbolic items that God sees of how he views these things. Humans, we view them as things, like people, humans, objects that we understand. That's our limited understanding. If you want to know what God's referring to in Revelation, how he sees them, well, go read the prophets. The prophets write in human terms what you and I will see on an everyday basis for each event. That's what they talk about, because they speak to humans in human terms. Revelation is written to John, but it's written in a symbolic form how God sees individuals and sees people. Does that make sense? So don't confuse them. You're not really going to see a seven-headed beast with scales coming out of the water. Okay, don't be confused. It won't look like that. Okay, I know. Bummer, right? No, it doesn't look that way because few people will bow down to it. Well, I just shoot the thing quick. That's our normal reaction, right? Where's my gun? So that's our human reaction. We're not going to see those things. Okay, just don't get it confused. So. When you see this trumpet, what John's seeing, burning up grass and fields and such, don't necessarily confuse them with actually like, you know, Kentucky bluegrass versus, you know, the crabgrass. I wouldn't mind the crabgrass burning up, but the other different grasses out there. Don't confuse, that's not what he's talking about. How do we know that? Because Messiah even pointed out, who are the grass? Humans who have no roots. People have no strength in them. And what are trees? It says the same thing. You who bear good fruit or not good fruit. Right? So we know what the symbols are. They're not hard to find. They're pretty thick throughout our Bible. So don't confuse them. So the first trumpet, which we discussed, the Feast of Trumpets, and I believe, personally, this is Daniel H.'s theology, the Feast of Trumpets are centered around the concept of these trumpets. I believe they are associated with one another. Okay, that's into my theology. Let's move on. It says... Yeah, Danielism, yes. The third of the trees are burned up and all the green grass was burned up. Of course, that we have that trumpet. So a third of the trees, what are trees? Well, they're supposed to be righteous individuals, right? Some produce good fruit, some produce bad fruit, some produce no fruit, or some produce shade, or whatever they do. A third of them don't survive, but those who have no roots, who have no strength in their God, the grass, they are all consumed. So they don't make it through this. They have no strength behind them, nothing holding them up. And of course, the second trumpet, also centered around the feast trumpets in my theology. In the second trumpet, verse 8, sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Excuse me. In the again, we have, we're discussing objects. This is how God sees them versus how man sees them. Don't get them confused. This is a God's viewpoint, what he looks at stuff. We already know what ships are because Solomon told us that. It's prosperity. And we already know what living creatures are in the sea have to do with as far as the abundance of life. So we know what those are. Our Torah talks about those. Our Tanakh talks about those. The prophets talk about those. We know what the symbols are. So we know what they are. And of course, you know what water is? It's the mass of people. We know what that is because it also tells us that. So we're talking about within a mass of peoples, the peoples on earth, it is what's being come on there. There it is a war of destruction. So God sees these things. This is his eyes, his viewpoint. Again, so that's the, of course, the second trumpet. The third trumpet, of course, sounds, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. It fell upon the earth, the rivers, and the springs of water. And the name of the star was Wormwood, and a third of the waters became wormwood. Many men died from the water because it was made bitter. Now, we already learned, actually, last Torah portion happened on Saturday. What was wormwood again? It is the delusion and the parasitical viewpoint that you can do whatever you want. God was okay with me. The idea of wormwood. It doesn't matter your conduct, your actions, how you live your life. This is not important. God, I'm with God in my heart, in my I believe I'm good, then we're good. That's the idea of wormwood. And you convince other men the same way, it results in your death, right? So when we already know that because the Torah tells us that's what wormwood is. So the symbolism of wormwood, what's God saying? This theology, this idea will spread thickly. And men will die because of it, because they believe their actions aren't important, but rather just their relationship with God is all that matters. That's a wormwood philosophy. That is a bitter, a false viewpoint designed to kill you. So continue on. And of course, the fourth trumpet of the great Feast of Trumpets. The fourth trumpet sounded, verse 12, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, a third of the stars, and a third of them were darkened, and a third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. And I looked, and heard an angel fly in the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, 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 to the inhabitants of the earth, because the remaining blast, the trumpet, of the three angels who are about to sound. Now, of course, I can't speak to all the symbols here because I don't know all of them. Obviously, we understand the idea of the sun and the moon, the stars being the descendants of Jacob and Jacob and his family. But of course, we get that from the Torah as it instructs us in that way. From both Abraham, because God said, I'll make your descendants like the stars of heaven. So referring to the descendants of Abraham in particular are referred to in the fourth trumpet. And of course, that family with, of course, Jacob's dream. We have the idea of what the stars, the moon are about as far as how they are affected or influenced by this particular trumpet. So he's referring to people then as well, but a particular group or a category of individuals that are descendants of Abraham and most specifically descendants of Jacob. And of course, verse 9, the fifth trumpet for the Feast of Trumpets, it says, the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven to the earth, and to him was given the key to the bottomless pit. He opened the bottomless pit, and a smoke arose out of the pit, and the smoke of a great furnace. The sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit, and then out of the smoke, locusts came upon the earth, and to them was given the power as scorpions of the earth to have power, and they were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And they were not given authority to kill, them, but to torment them for 5 months. The torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. In those days, men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die, and death will flee from them. And the shape of the locusts was like that horses prepared for battle, and their heads were crowned something like gold, and their faces were like the faces of men. They had hair like women's hair, and their teeth like lion's teeth, and they had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots with many horses running into battle. They had tails like scorpions, and they were stinging their tails, and their power was to hurt men for 5 months. And they had as a king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek has the name Apollyon. One woe is past. Behold, there's still two more woes to come after these things. I'm not going to cover every detail, but obviously the fifth trumpet, of course, refers to the bottomless pit. Clearly, it's referring to death. So, because bottomless pit is death, that is the only pit that can ever be filled up, right? And can you ever fill up a grave? It is impossible. So what happens? As long as something's alive, it can still die. So as long as life exists, that is one pit that can never be filled. Hence, it is the bottomless pit. You can put all the life you want into it. It still wants more. It still consumes more. It's a bottomless pit. It's not a physical like hole in the ground. It is a symbolic of death. So the angel, of course, has the keys to death, to bring forth death and torment. But of course, the items that he brings forth are not allowed to kill. And we also know from the seal on the forehead, we know who that is, because I believe it is Isaiah? No, Ezekiel. I think it's Isaiah. I think it's Isaiah who talks about it. Discussing the angel with the horn that writes out all those on their forehead, marks each one of them who sigh and lament and are frustrated with the lack of obedience to God's words. We have that the prophets tell us that. That's what that individual is who is marked. Those who are frustrated, they don't have the power to fix it, but no one follows God. And they're mad about it, but they can't do anything about it. So they pray to God, say, God, this is not right. This is wrong to do. And God said, don't worry, I'll check you off. And he checks each one of them off. And he only marked those who believe and feel and know what God is and follow his words and are frustrated with others and the nation does not, right? That's who those categories are. Those individuals, of course, are not allowed to be injured or tormented. I will not go into theology of what what this item looks like as far as the object being described, because, yeah, that's just a... That's another bottomless pit, metaphorically speaking. The sixth trumpet angel sounds, verse 13, for the Feast of Trumpets, our sixth trumpet sounding, and the voice of four horns, the golden altar which before God, saying, the sixth angel of the trumpet, release the four angels who are bound the great river Euphrates. So the four angels who have been prepared for the hour and the day and the month, the year, were released to kill a third of mankind. Now the number of the army, the horsemen, was 200 million, and I heard the number of them, and I thus saw the horses, the vision. Those who sat on them had breastplates of fiery red, hyacinth blue, sulfur yellow. The heads of horses were like the heads of lions, and out of their mouths came fire and smoke and brimstone. By these three plagues, a third of mankind was killed by the fire and the smoke, the brimstone, which came out of their mouths. For their power is their mouth and their tails. For their tails like serpents, having heads, and with them they do harm. But the rest of mankind who were not killed by these plagues did not repent of the works of their hands, and that they should not worship demons and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and wood, which neither see nor hear nor walk. And they did not repent of their murders or their sorceries or their sexual immorality or their thefts. So who's being slaughtered? It tells you, a third of mankind. That's pretty obvious, right? Fortunately, it was very easy to see. I will not discuss the nature of a 200 million man army, because I don't know what that looks like. It's bigger than I can think of, so it doesn't matter. In the different colors, we already know some of the colors. The Torah tells us what red means, tells us what blue means. It does not tell us what yellow means, so I can't answer what yellow means in God's viewpoint. But so I don't know. As far as what the thing looks like, doesn't matter. What is the nature of that particular trumpet? Are you comforted by this trumpet coming, the sound of this particular one coming? No, not likely. If you are, I'll be impressed. This one is not a pleasant one. This is a negative, a downer, a destructive trumpet, right? How many of these trumpets are beneficial? Uplifting, making you feel good about yourself. None of them really warm and fuzzy, are they? Now remember, God's voice. It's either a comforting one that you are not afraid, or one which you are afraid, right? Have we gone through any of these trumpets and found one that was makes us not afraid?
One that says, come up here.
We discussed that one yet. Well, there is one, a little bit of comfort. It says, well, they can't harm those who are marked by God. Well, at least those who, that recipient who are marked with God's hand, they can be comforted by it. So I have a question for you. Those individuals, are they afraid of these trumpets? No, they're not. But who is afraid? The rest of mankind. We're guilty. They have the sense of guilt, the sense of fear. The ones who do not, as Sharon pointed out earlier, those who do not follow the voice of their God, of our God. They're the ones who are afraid. They're the ones who are, of course, in this case, it points out here, they also have no sense of repentance either. They're afraid in a very physical sense only, not in a spiritual sense, not to be internalize the fear to actually change behavior. But the fear is just, of course, surface alone. So we have, obviously, most of these are very destructive. So the voice of God in the chorus of Revelation, which the Feast of Trumpets is supposed to symbolize, of course, in my theology, naturally, the Feast of Trumpets is that it is a destructive power. But it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a fearful one. Because as we heard from Moses and from the time of the Sinai, the Exodus for the Ten Commandments, you can choose to be afraid or choose not to be. Well, in the case that we learned from Isaiah, those who are called by God's voice, those who are called back to Jerusalem are not afraid. Those who are left behind are the ones who are afraid. So we learn this nature of the voice of God can be a fearful thing or a negative thing, but it can be the same voice. That's what's interesting to me about it. He can use the same words and just say them. The voice gets identical to person A and person B. But person A is not afraid and person B is. He said the same words. So the voice of God is not I have a secret message for you over here, a secret message for you over there. No, it's the same words, the same message. We all read the same words. They're all written down here. There's nothing unique about them. We share them. Those who are good or evil, we share the same words. The words don't make us afraid. Our actions do. It's how we translate those words into, well, why is that going to affect me? That's what makes us afraid. What side of the coin am I on? The recipient of the sledgehammer or the one in his pocket? I imagine the one in his pocket, right? The one who's knocking on the head, a little tap of the head. So the sixth trumpet, of course, it goes into a great detail as far as the events that happen. I want to point something out to us because it's important to know that just because something is not fearful to us, because we know our God, doesn't necessarily mean it isn't harmful to us. Does it make sense? Sometimes the voice of our God is still physically harmful, but not necessarily something we should fear. Does that make sense? It's no different than a father or a mother having to correct a child. Well, righteous men are corrected and they get reproved. They say, I'll do better. Now, was it a fearful voice? You could argue that in that the righteous man or the child tries to improve their behavior to avoid that correction again. But in some instances, the voice of the God of our God is harmful to us. But we have to do it anyway. I'll bring one to mind. Was Messiah thrilled about what he's going to go through? No, he wasn't, was he? But was he listening to his God's voice? Yes. Was he afraid of his God's voice? No. Was it harmful to his body? Oh, most definitely. Did he want to do it? No, quite clearly he said he didn't want to. This is not what he wanted to do. Quite the opposite. He wanted to get away with it. He said, take this cup from me. This is too much for me. The whole sweating blood. That's not something that's a comfortable event. So just because our God's voice is supposed to not make us afraid doesn't mean it isn't hard on us. Let's read about two individuals. chapter 11 of Revelation, before we get to the seventh trumpet, says, I was given a reed like a measuring rod. Excuse me, chapter 11. And the angel stood saying, rise, there is the temple of God, the altar, and all the worship there. Leave out the outer court, which is out of the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles. They will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. And I'll give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees, the two lampstands, standing before the God of the earth. Anyone wants to harm them, fire proceeds from their mouth and devours their enemies. Anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in this manner. These have the power to shut heaven so no rain falls the days of their prophecy. And they have power over waters to turn them to blood and to strike the earth with all plagues as often as they desire. And when they have finished their testimony, the beast that ascends of the bottomless pit will make war against them and overcome them and kill them. Their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom in Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. Then those of the peoples and tribes and tongues and nations will see their dead bodies 3.5 days and will not allow their dead bodies to be put into graves. And those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them, making merry and sending gifts to one another, because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth. Was that a pleasant event these two goes through? These two individuals go through? No, that's not. But were they afraid of their God? No. They know what they're going to go through? Probably. Were they going to do it anyway? Yes. Were they following their God's voice? Yes. Were they afraid of their God's voice? No. Was it still harmful? Yes. Was it right? Yes. So God's voice may bring a hard thing, but it doesn't make it wrong. It still could be right. So you may hear things that maybe, God, I don't want to do that. But it's still right. And how do we know what God's voice sounds like? As Messiah said, those who are of truth know my voice. So as long as you're of truth, you know God's voice. You know what the trumpet sounds like. You're not afraid of it, regardless of what it might bring. It's not easy. Don't get me wrong. It's not easy. Regardless of what it brings, you're not afraid of the voice. Because you know what is true. Continuing on, it says, verse 11, at 3.5 days, the breath of life of God entered them, and they stood on their feet, and a great fear fell on those who saw them. And they heard a loud voice from heaven saying, come up here. And they ascended to heaven in a cloud, and their enemies saw them. In the same hour, there was a great earthquake, and a tenth of the city fell. In the earthquake, 7,000 men were killed, and the rest were afraid and gave glory to the God of heaven. The second woe was past. Behold, the third woe is coming quickly. So in that particular trumpet, we have a series of events, of course. I didn't read through all of them. But the trumpet was devastating to many. But know the tail end of that one. They gave glory to God. Now, at the end of the chapter of chapter 9, so the men continued on in their sexual immorality, their evil ways. They didn't change anything after all of this mass destruction. Nothing changed. But then once they see these two witnesses take off up in the sky, so those who remained after the 7,000 died in an earthquake said, wow, this is the hand of God. Now, mind you, giving glory to God doesn't mean you're praising God and saying, oh, how great, I'll follow you. No. Giving glory to God is recognizing who is doing it. You're recognizing God's doing it. You may not agree with him. You may say, but that God's doing this. Yeah, you're right. He is. And you may be upset by it. Doesn't matter. But you recognize a God is doing it, not a man. It's an important thing. Whatever God it is, in this case, since they're recognizing, it says, to the God of heaven, they know which one it is. They may not necessarily agree with him, may not necessarily like it, they may think the trumpet still sounds very scary, but they do recognize which one it is. That's an important recognition. And of course, the last trumpet for the Feast of Trumpets, trumpet number 7, in verse 15, it says, the seventh angel sounded, and there were a loud voice in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and his Christ. He shall reign forever and ever. The 24 elders who sat before God on their thrones fell on their faces and worshiped God, saying, we give you thanks, O Lord God Almighty, the one who is and was and was to come, because you have taken your great power and reigned, and the nations were angry, and your wrath has come, and the time of the dead that should be judged. And you should reward your servants, the prophets and the saints, and all who fear your name, small and great, and to destroy those who destroy the earth. The temple of God was opened in heaven, and the ark of his covenant was seen in his temple, and there were lightnings, noises, thunderings, and earthquake, and great hail. We'll stop there. I'm not going to go through much further in this. So the nature of these trumpets, as I mentioned, we started out here. Trumpets can be a positive thing for those who are not afraid of God, or a negative thing for those who don't follow God or don't fear him at all, right? You can be recipient of, you receive the same words, but whether or not you receive as an individual the same correction or the same comfort varies. So an individual can choose to receive the correction from God, the destruction, the destroying hand, with the same words, or he can receive the same words, no different, the benefit and comforting from God. But God is very thorough in the words he chooses. Hence, a trumpet sounds very similar, whether it's one, or that one, or the one over there. The same sound can bring both either destruction to one, or comfort and lifting up to the other. The words don't necessarily change. Right? And how do we know which one we're going to listen to? As John, don't forget what it said, those who are of truth hear my voice. They hear the voice. Not the screaming sound of destruction, but the voice of God. There's a difference. The screaming sound of destruction is ear-piercing and scary. The voice of God, as Moses showed us, is intriguing. And desiring to call, and you walk toward it. The different nature of these two voices, right? Though it's the same sound. In Moses' case, at Sinai, we see that the same sound scared the people, but didn't scare Moses. But that same sound in the book of Revelation, it scares a group of people, but not necessarily everyone. The individuals who are marked are not afraid of it. So the same sound can produce two different things. So our nature of the Feast of Trumpets is that type of appointed time. As the prophets had already stated, there is an event in that day. There's an appointed time that these events are supposed to occur. We can debate when, whether what year, decade, century, I don't really care, what millennia it's going to be in. It doesn't really matter. The appointed time does exist because God wrote it down. And God never, ever lies. So he wrote it down and gave it to us. We know the event exists. When, how it plays out, only the prophets can tell us that much information. And the Revelation, of course, gives us a story of the nature of the events, how God sees them, and what side of the event you want to be on. But these events are important for us to remember that because of them, they are at a point of time, and he symbolized them to not forget them based on a sound. Oops, not that one. Not that sound. Not the falling parts. The parts that didn't fall down. But it's based upon a sound as a remembrance. To remember the sound. Remember God's voice, what it sounds like. It sounds like truth. It sounds very loud. Or, as Elijah even pointed out, it can sound very quiet. But as long as you are of truth, you'll still hear it. Right? That's an important thing. Of truth, you still hear it. Does that make sense? Okay. The nature of trumpets. To hear God's voice. Any questions or comments regarding trumpets, the nature of this holy day, this appointed time of God? Yeah, our next day is fasting. That's a different problem. That's a whole other category of dealing with fasting in 10 days from now. That's another category, which actually I should say it's not unrelated. It is related to this. As I mentioned earlier, as I hinted on, I didn't go into great detail. The ones who get their foreheads marked, the ones who they got to change their clothing to pure white clothing, they were fasting. That's what they were. They were upset and they were fasting to to try to get their God to see how dangerous their nation, how it has traveled, how far down it went. So this is the same people that get marked in their forehead, say, yeah, that one's mine. Yeah, that one over there, that one's mine too. I'll take the one over there too. That's what God's, what God's doing, and we will discuss atonement when we get there. We get to that point. So the nature of when God's marking them, and what does it get to be? What does it mean to get marked? What kind of person are you to be marked? We're not the voice of God produces either fear or comfort. You want to be in the comfort side. There are certain things on your end that get you there. If you want to be on the fear side, there's certain things on your end that get you there too. You get to choose. Because God gave us two ways to live. You either follow him and his voice, or you don't. So there are two outcomes. Life or death. You choose. Everything in life is a choice. I want to hear God's voice being a comforting one. Therefore, it requires certain things of me to be a comfort when I hear that truth. I don't want to hear God's voice as a destructive one. So that requires things of me that I don't do or don't act like to avoid that destructive sound, right? We'll discuss that in great detail come Day of Atonement when we get there. Any of the questions or comments regarding our Feast of Trumpets or Day of Great Sound Blasting in God's Voice? We'll close the prayer then. Almighty God, our great Heavenly Father, thank you for our holy day, our time and appointed time with you, our time to study and to hear you, to listen to your voice, to listen to your direction, to listen to what is true. Father, help our spirit inside of us to follow your will and not our own, that we are comforted with you and your words. We ask you to bless us the rest of our holiday season, Father, our time together today as well as the coming holidays. For you are sure, you are trustworthy, and you are kind. We ask your blessing, Father, in Yeshua's name. Amen.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L.info. Hallel.info.